pleasure now to introduce to you our speaker for this afternoon, Johnny H. from Long Beach.
Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here sober. GSR meeting, I guess I should tell you what my credentials are. I'm the assistant chairperson at the Big Book Group, Monday night, meets in Bellflower. The assistant chairman means simply this, that I get to assist the chairman in putting the chairs away. That wouldn't be so bad if the guy who was the chairman wasn't somebody that I sponsored. It's his moment of revenge. You're not putting the damn chairs away right, he said to me. Okay. And then 5 minutes later, the chairs are put away. But I'm glad to be here. I've been asked to talk to you about the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to let you know that right out of the gate, I'm not an authority or a consultant or a counselor on a program of Alcoholics Anonymous or its disease. I'm an example, good, bad, and different, that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. It's the only program I know anything about. It's the only program I'm interested in. It's amazing that I go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and they're called Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. That's amazing to me. Now, a lot of people seem like to me today, I don't know what type of a mentality, but yet I do know what type of a mentality would make somebody sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and overinterpret what's being said here. When it says things like, my primary purpose is to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, some people say, that really doesn't mean that, does it? Doesn't that mean that anybody can do it? No, it doesn't. It means exactly what it says. That I'm an alcoholic and my primary purpose in life is to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Now, if it falls on anybody else, that's fine. But I had no purpose before I came here. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959, was introduced to this magnificent thing called sobriety. And I applied the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous' program recovery to my own personal life, and my own personal life got free from the bondage of the shackles of my past. I learned to live in some type of a freedom, and then I was exposed to a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous, which is entirely different from our program. A lot of people seem to have that confused. A lot of people seem to think that the fellowship is the program. If you're thinking that, you're in a lot of trouble. The reason that is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a set of spiritual principles when practice is a way of life for perfect instruction, foolproof, and application. And anybody who would apply them to their life will get better. Now, the difference between that and the fellowship is this, that the fellowship is made up of human beings, people, and all people have feet of clay. Don't ever let anybody ever tell you any difference than that. The best you ever get here in Alcoholics Anonymous is basic human being. They'll fail you, and they'll fail you every time. But these principles in my life have never seemed amazed at what they would do in my life. And it's amazing, isn't it, that our symbol and our, I don't know whether you want to call it a logo or what you want to call it, it's consisted of one little perfect triangle has three sides to it. And one of them is about recovery. One of them is about service, and one of those lines is about unity. And in my way of thinking, recovery is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Service is what we can do for others, and unity is the application of the 12 traditions into my life on a personal basis. Now, when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would sit in many meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's even read in my home group, and it. But they don't pay any attention to me in my home group. I can't get them to change anything. But it says that the traditions are to the group what the steps are to the individual. Now, being the type of an egotist that I am, my first inclination with that was, well, you see, they're for the group. They don't have anything to do with me. That's for the group. That's way over there somewhere. That's got nothing to do with me. That totally, totally isolates and separates me from every single thing here. This is not. It's for the group. So the group's got to have it. And so one night, I was going to a meeting with my sponsor, a guy by the name of Norm Alpe, and we were at a meeting, and I used to go a lot of meetings with Norm, and I'd walk in behind him, you know, he's a speaker, you know what I mean? They'd say, oh, there's a speaker, and I'd walk in behind him, you know. And we have coffee breaks in our meetings down south, and we usually have the speaker. And a lot of people in my part of the world think the coffee break and the reading of traditions is the only reading to read the traditions is to settle down the crowd so they can get to the real message, whatever it is. And some of them have even learned to sing along with it in some places. You know what I mean? That's all they ever learn about the traditions is principles before personalities, but they learn that well sometimes. It cost them $30,000 to learn that some places. I mean, just... But anyhow, this one particular night, I was cutting up, you know, because I told you, I'm an egotist, and I like to cut up, and particularly when I'm the speaker's friend and everybody's watching, you know what I mean? And so along about the time they got the principle before personalities, I stumbled and sit down into my chair and waited for what I came for, to hear my sponsor speak. And everybody that came to hear my sponsor speak would know that I'm there with my sponsor and that I'm his favorite that evening. And I am particularly enraptured with myself that particular evening. And because I know of none of you people in this part of the world ever get enraptured with yourself, but down south we have a little smog. It kind of makes our brains goofy sometimes. And so we're on the way home that night, and I'm riding along with my sponsor, and he said, enjoy the meeting. Oh, sure did, Norm. Sure did. You like everything about it? Yeah. Did you hear the tradition? Yeah, oh, yeah, sure did, Norm, yeah. He says, on your way back from the coffee? Yeah. What do you think about it? They are to the group, but the steps are to the individual, Norm, yeah. He stops in the middle of the street, turned and looked at me and called me an idiot. He said, where did you get that crap? And I said, they just read it. I mean, that's a good excuse, isn't it? They just read it. He said, Johnny, don't you know that the 12 traditions were written by our co-founder because he discovered that each one covered some type of a personal weakness within himself? I said, no, I didn't know that. He said, are you an alcoholic? You told me that one of the first people you ever identified with was Bill Wilson. I said, yeah. He said, if you're an alcoholic and Bill Wilson was an alcoholic and he had some type of a personal flaw, there's a good chance that you have it, isn't it? I mean, see how he used to talk to me in these deep philosophical phrases he used, right? He said, I suggest that maybe you should go home and look at your traditions and try to apply them to yourself on a personal basis and see what they mean to you. And so I went home and took a look at them that way. And they take on an entirely different concept, an entirely different knowledge about what's going on here than just the very idea. Now, you've got to realize a very simple thing. That in the history of mankind, as far as 4,000 years of recorded history goes, there's only been two answers, two times in all of history that there's ever been an answer for the alcoholic. Only two times in recorded history that there's ever been an answer for the disease of alcoholism. One of them was in the 1800s when six little guys settled down in a bar in Baltimore, Maryland, and got to talking to one another, and they found out, well, then we talked to one another, they had the answer. They found out that when one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic, something happens and the alcoholic's got to stay sober. And so they carried this thing out into the streets and they carried up and down the East Coast and they grew in numbers astoundingly fast, 10, 15, 20 times faster than Alcoholics Anonymous ever dreamed about growing. Up and down the East Coast in the 1800s, 1801, 41, 42, 43. And they grew to 100,000, 200,000 strong in a period of nothing. But by 1845, this group called the Washingtonians was completely and totally extinct. Nobody even knew anything about them. And the reason that was, is that somewhere in the middle of this thing, these people got to seeming the idea that maybe, because they had this deal, that these people were getting sober and staying sober, they got some kind of an idea that what a wonderful thing this is that we have here. We should just let everybody in on it. Look how wonderful it would be if we brought everybody in and gave them this wonderful program. And in 1845, they were extinct because they forgot a very simple thing. They forgot that their primary purpose in life was to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic. That's the message. And they forgot that primary purpose and they were extinct. And there was no answer for an alcoholic between 1845 and 1935 when a New York stockbroker sat down in a room in a gatehouse in Akron, Ohio with a lady by the name of Henrietta Seibling, who was a non-alcoholic, and talked to a bankrupt doctor called Bob Smith and found out that when they talked to one another, they got to stay sober. And from that grew our fellowship, Alcoholics Anonymous, and our program of recovery. Because they worked out a program of recovery, and then they worked it, and then wrote it down for people like you and me. And in 1939, Bill wrote a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, edited by Dr. Bob and a member of the group from Akron. And by 1940 and 1941, Alcoholics Anonymous, as we know it today, was almost on the verge of extinction. For the same primary reason that the Washingtonian groups disintegrated, Alcoholics Anonymous was going the same way. People were going everywhere. There were people in Florida selling memberships of Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody said, "You can't do that." I said, "Why not?" "Well, you can't." "Who said?" "Well, you just can't." I said, "Why are you doing that?" And the guy said, "Well, it's very simple. Anything time anybody gets anything for free doesn't mean anything to them." True. And so somebody who was concerned gave Bill Wilson some information about the Washingtonian groups. And he wrote a letter to Bill and he said, "Maybe you ought to read this article on the Washingtonian group because it seems that Alcoholics Anonymous is headed in the same direction." And from that thing, and Bill, and that's how extinct this Washingtonian group has come, our founder and co-founder never even heard about the Washingtonian group until he got that letter. And so he sat down and he wrote out these traditions, these set of spiritual principles, if you will. They're vitally important today and probably more so important today than ever before in the history of time. Because we have people in Alcoholics Anonymous today singing that same old song that they sang in the 1800s. Isn't this wonderful? That just opened up the door and let everybody in. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody could work these principles and just grow into this wonderful spiritual life? You can't even get alcoholics dying of alcoholism to work the damn principle. How are you going to get everybody to do it? People in this room are going to die of alcoholism because they weren't worked these principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. They think that all they got to do is not drink and put their butt in a chair and this thing will go on and on and on. And they have people sitting all over Alcoholics Anonymous, all over this country, who think, by some strange hook or crook in their head, that Alcoholics Anonymous was only formulated in this time and space so they could enjoy it. And so they don't need to know anything else about it, other than the fact that I don't drink and I go to meetings. Well, you don't have to worry about them because they won't be not drinking and not going to meetings very long with that type of attitude. Let's look at the first tradition. My common welfare should come first. My common welfare. My recovery depends upon A unity. My recovery. If there ain't no unity, I can't recover. If there ain't no Alcoholics Anonymous for me to recover in, I can't recover. Think about it, if you will, about the 100 years that elapsed from 1845 to 1935, where there were no answers for alcoholics. The people like you and I had to die out in them streets or be locked up in insane asylums with wet brains or died a horrible death. My grandfather died and never got a chance to come to Alcoholics Anonymous because there was no Alcoholics Anonymous. Think about it. Think about how fortunate you and I are to be sitting in a time and an area when it's a place where you and I can come with an answer for this illness of ours. It's amazing to me how you can see these things. It says in this thing, for my group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Isn't that amazing? What that does for me, and I don't know what it does for you, what that does for me, that keeps my ego whittled down to such a shape that I'm small enough to live with me. See, that's what this deal really is. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous whittles on that monumental egotism that an alcoholic like me seems to be engulfed in. And by practicing these principles on further, these 12 magnificent traditions into my life on a personal basis, I get whittled down more and more and more. That means very simply that I'm sitting in an AA meeting, my own home group maybe, and the elections come up and they elect somebody I don't want to be secretary. What am I supposed to do? Get my coffee pot and go somewhere else? Go over and start some group with some people who really believe as I do? No. That means if the group conscience is spoken. See, my home group, my Monday night meeting that I attend is a big meeting. There's many people in that meeting every Monday night here today. It's a big group. Matter of fact, the secretary of our group is sitting there. Kind of blew her ego. I didn't vote for her either. Well, she was running against my wife. What was I supposed to do? No, I sponsor her, so it's all right. But just think about it. Not very long ago, in our group, a few years ago, we had an election, and they stacked the group and elected this lady as secretary who was a professional, and she damn near destroyed our group within a year by bringing in her friends and her obligations to speak at our meeting and talk about psychobabble and other nonsensical things that have no place in an AA meeting. And every Monday night until midnight and 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, I would stand out on the steps and the sidewalk of our group, and I'd hear things like, "Let's go, get the coffee pot, man. You know, you started this damn group. Let's go start another one, Sponge. Let's go, man. Come on. We don't have to put up with this." I said, "No. You voted for her. We're going to stay here. And next year when our election comes up, we'll elect a member of Alcoholics Anonymous as our secretary." Went on and on and on. Damn near destroyed the group. Now, it had been very easy for me then in those period of time to say, "You bet. Come on, you little mice. I'll play my tune and lead you right off the wharf." But we didn't do that. And I'll tell you right now, the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I attend on a Monday night is probably the best informed group of Alcoholics Anonymous I know about anywhere in the world. Because they make a practice of studying the steps and the traditions. They have a meeting that they go to where they study the book Alcoholics Anonymous. In our meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was a large meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, only alcoholics participate in that meeting. Only alcoholics. We have a little saying in our meeting. It's read at the close of every meeting. Come back next week, because all the participants next week will be both sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Goes along with this third tradition seems to be a little bit bent out of shape. It says that my only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. In the book Alcoholics Anonymous and in the third traditions and in 12 and 12 and in Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, it says somewhere in there, and I can't quote it verbatim because I'm not a book thumper, but I'll tell you this. It says somewhere in there that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous whenever I say so. Whenever I say so. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that means very simply this. When I admit that I'm an alcoholic, I can become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I say that I am an alcoholic, I can participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I'm not, I can't. You've got to understand that. Open, close, up, or down. When a non-alcoholic participates in an AA meeting, it is no longer an AA meeting. It's no longer that. You've got to remember that. And I don't care what anybody else says. That's what these traditions say. And I'll prove it to you. It says that each group should be autonomous, except the matter affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Each group. That means I should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole, or other members of AA as a whole. Let's just suppose that my meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or my meeting, that I've adopted the AA name for lack of a better phrase, is in the habit of allowing non-alcoholics to participate in that meeting. That affects AA as a whole. because people who come in don't know. New people don't know what we do here. Most of the newcomers who come in today are all filled with this psychobabble from these places that they come in from, who think that we're attached to them. And they've been told that all you got to do is go to a meeting. They can't kick you out. That's what they've been told. And you can't fault people because they don't know. I don't. That's why the group that I attend on a Monday night is probably the best informed group of Alcoholics Anonymous that I know of, because the people there inform the people. We can't do it. We can't destroy Alcoholics Anonymous by allowing non-alcoholics to participate in our meeting, because they don't do any good. I mean, they have to. See, I don't care what you do. I don't care if you belong to Who Parked the Car Around the Corner Anonymous and everything in between it. I don't care if you belong to Narcotic Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Sex Anonymous, 40 other 5,000 anonymous deals. I don't care what you do. You keep it the hell out of my AA meetings. And why that is the fifth tradition. My primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I can't do that if I'm not an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, probably the greatest word you ever heard in your life, or somebody probably said to you, "I understand how you feel." If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand how I feel. You'll never understand the loneliness that I lived in, the isolation and the apartness that I lived in all my life before I sat here with you. When I sat in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard people get up at podium and say, "I used to drink." I couldn't identify with that. I didn't know what was going on. You know what I identified with my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous? It's the strangest thing I know. My first identity with an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous was a New York stockbroker by the name of Bill Wilson and his story. And I didn't identify with his drunken escapades. Not at all. You know what I identified with? I identified with his sobriety when he woke up with the four horsemen of terror and bewilderment. I identified with that because I was cold sober, and I was terrified, and I was bewildered, and I was different, and I was crazy, and I didn't know what was going on, and I didn't belong anywhere in the world. I identified with that. And I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and something happened to me because the language of your heart touched my heart. You talk to me in the language that all the psychiatry and sociology and penology and criminology and lawyers and doctors and school teachers never seem to know. You touched my heart with your heart, and you told me things like, "I understand how you feel, and if you come along and do what we do, then these things will happen to you." And I said, "What do you do?" "So we just have meetings." You know, I said in his thing in the sixth tradition that an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. These problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Now, I know that money, property, and prestige doesn't affect you. But I have a direct correlation between my left hip pocket and my serenity pouch. Seems to be that way. And when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would sit there and I would see people do things. You know, I'd see people like me up there talking with a nice sport coat on and a pair of slacks, and I'd think, "He's got it together." And then if time will have, you know, if you go to work, I mean, I don't want to throw a bad word out there at some of you, but if you go to work, there's a tradition that covers that in here, too. I'm sorry. I'm going to kill all your excuses for being a jerk before I'm through here this afternoon. I'm going to kill all your excuses for all this nonsense you hear in all these meetings all the time. I'm going to kill all that psychobabble that's thrown in here from these charlatans who try to sell our program for a dollar bill. I'm going to kill it. But I know some of you say, "Who do you think he is?" I'm just an alcoholic. That's all. I'm an alcoholic who has four little grandsons. Four. I love my grandchildren. I love them with the depth. When I hold them little rascals in my lap, something just happens to me. My grandsons sit there. Now, I hope and pray to God my grandsons never have to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, or my great-grandchildren never have to come here. I hope and pray to God that. Not because I wouldn't want them to have what we have here. I just never want them to have to go through the hell that I had to go through to get here. That's all. But if they do, if by some strange hook down the line, one of them is an alcoholic, I want them to have the same opportunity to recover in a program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I had in 1959. That's what I want. That's why I care. I don't care why anybody else cares. It's really simple. When I'm new, I'm living a lie. I don't know I'm living a lie, but I'm living a lie. And I'm showing up to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in my new car, and people say, "How you doing?" I take them outside and show them a new car. Here, my car. "How you doing?" I say, "Look at my new suit of clothes." Go down to the Baskin Robbins, have ice cream sodas for the group. But see, I have to leave that meeting, and I have to go home to an empty house and wander around in the neighborhood looking for two little girls who were my children. At various places, I'd find them in babysitters or wherever they were stashed for that evening, and I'd put them in the car, and I'd make the round to some of the bars, and I'd find their mother, and ceremoniously or unceremoniously, I'd take her out of the car. But I couldn't tell anybody, because I thought, you 5 years sober, you're supposed to, and got these cars and things, that's supposed to be your symbol of success. I didn't know the symbol of success in Alcoholics Anonymous was a quiet heart and a sense of peace and well-being. I didn't know that, because I knew nothing about any of this stuff. I was only caught up in the world. I learned that. I learned that from my sponsor. I learned it through these traditions. It says an A group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. I don't know how that applies to me, but it says I should be self-supporting, declining outside contribution. That means I have to go to work. My sponsor told me to go to work, you bum. He knew all about this. I don't know how you feel about it, but a few years ago, I was sponsoring this guy, and he was kind of an intellectual sort of dude. You know what I mean? He had it together, and he had a wife who had a good job. She had a great job. I mean, making a lot of money. And he got 6 or 7 months sober and found out he was a big man with his intellect at the club. He'd sit around and drink coffee and talk to him about philosophical matters in all ways, shape, or form. And after about 9 or 10 months, maybe a year, he had your birthday cake, maybe 15 months, we were sitting somewhere having a cup of coffee at a meeting one night, and he says, I just feel awful all the time. He said, "I'm sober," and he said, "it seemed like to me there's something a little bit missing. I just kind of feel cruddy all the time." He said, "What do you think about that?" I said, "I used to feel like that all the time when I was a pimp." He got indignant. He said, "What?" And I said, "That's what I thought when I was accepting money from women for my upkeep." He looked at me and he said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Your wife works and you don't. Get you a job. Go to work. Maybe you'll feel better." You know, he got a job and went to work and felt better? Really true. I mean, I don't know what it is about working. My sponsor used to make me go to work. I remember working in oil fields in midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, raining. I'm working 90 feet above the ground on one of them monkey boards in one of them oil derricks. And every time I stopped the brake, at that particular period of time, the twist was in session. You know, do the twist? And the driller looked up at me one night, and I'm up there, 3 o'clock in the morning in the rain. I'm going, he said, "Damn, you're crazy, man. What are you doing up there?" I didn't know it, but you know what it was? For the first time in my entire lifetime, I was self-supporting through my own contributions for me and everybody around me. I was functioning in the world as a man. As a man. I used to think a man was whooping on suckers and stabbing them and shooting them and and getting women on. I found out that a man gets up every day and goes to work. A man pays his bills and takes care of his family. He isn't dependent upon somebody else to take care of him. My children were dependent upon me to take care of him. And somewhere around Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to learn to grow up, so I had to become self-supporting through my own contribution. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. I should remain forever non-professional. I should. because I'm much more effective as a non-professional than I am as a professional. Because my question to everybody all my life said in them institutions, they say, I want to help you. I said, would you help me if you weren't getting paid? They never could answer that. None of them ever quit their job and tried to help me, I'll tell you that. It's one of the biggest faults in Alcoholics Anonymous today. It's professionals who just lump everybody into one big pile and throw them into AA meetings. It's one of the big faults around here. We don't do anybody any favors by doing that. And the people who are doing it to you haven't done you any favors. Because if you're going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're not an alcoholic, you're going to be uncomfortable, restless, and irritable, and discontent. And you're going to be mad because you paid somebody a lot of money and they lied to you because they got paid. Our co-founder, Bill Wilson, in his talk on the tradition, said about this professionalism that that's counseling alcoholics face to face. Now, what would a member of Alcoholics Anonymous tell another alcoholic except about Alcoholics Anonymous and what happened to them? My old sponsor used to have a saying, you do a little just for the hell of doing it. When I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm 6 or 7, 8 months out of the penitentiary, and I ain't got no money. I don't work very often because the work the thing that I'm in, these oil fields, they don't work yet too often if you don't know nothing. I mean, if you can't put a wrench on the right way in an oil field, they won't work you too about there. And I didn't know how to do that. They put me up 90 feet so I wouldn't hurt anybody. And then I drop stuff on folks. I mean, just... I get this call. I've been recommended from this warden out of one of these institutions that I was in to go out to this seminar, symposium of service at this place called Norco, which is now a big recovery company. It wasn't even open in those days. And the role of this symposium on service was the role of the offender in treatment. Now, you remember something. I ain't got a dime. It's not a pretzel. I got a wife. Got this little girl back now, and she's pregnant. And I ain't got a pretzel. And I go out there, and essentially what these people offered me were, they offered me a job as a liaison for the parole office. Liaison. A nice word for stool pigeon. Sounds great if you want to dress it up, you know what I mean? Liaison. You know. Isn't it amazing how people keep changing things to make things sound good? Have you ever stopped to figure when toilet paper became bathroom tissue? But anyhow, I'm all in. Man, they offered me. You know what they offered me? This was in 1962, I think it was. They offered me $1,000 a month, which $1,000, was a lot of money in 1962. They offered me a little office in Huntington Park in the parole department, a little nameplate for my desk, where I could sit and watch, so I'd know who I was when they asked me. A car, state car, and all I had to do was take these parolees who were having problems, take them to AA meetings or Narcotic Anonymous meetings or whatever it was. Wow, man. Now, I don't have to work nights no more. I don't have to work weekends no more. I can go to meetings at night and I'm going to get paid for it. God, what a great deal. And I'm going to be, this is the trap. This is the trap. This is what kills all of them. This is a trick. And I am going to be able to help people. Oh, wow, am I wonderful. The only thing that saved me was that night they had a little break in this thing, and I had to go to a meeting with this little lady that I loved much. Her name was Myrtle Snyder. I loved her a lot. She was like a mother to me. And we went to this meeting, and we were going home, and I picked her. She gets in the car, and I'm telling her all this stuff. Woo! Man! We're going to have a car and money. We're going to be able to go to meetings. I'm going to be able to take this to Hatchapi. That's going to be great, Mom. She said, I want to ask you a question. What do you want to know? And I tell her what I have to do. She says, how do you sell a gift? Particularly if the gift isn't yours. She said, remember this. The gift was given to you for free and for fun. If you tarnish it or try to sell any part of it, you'll die a horrible, agonizing death. You're an alcoholic. Give it to you freely, give it back freely. No amount of money is going to make it better. No amount of money is going to make it any better. So I had to go back that next day with my tail between my legs and tell those people. I'd be glad to come to their institution and talk to anybody they wanted me to talk to them about a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. But until that time, I had to work and be self-supported through my own contribution. I have never regretted that decision.
Never. Because the people that I work with in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I work with a lot of people here, all know that I do it for free and for fun, and by helping them, I get to stay sober myself for no other reason. Much more impact. I take sometimes sitting in the back row of that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous when I came to my first meeting, and no matter how goofy those people were, if I'd have sat in that meeting and one of my counselors and one of my parole officers had stood at the podium at Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that day, I'd have left and I'd have never came back. Because I'd have thought it was just another scam, another deal. The amazing thing about most alcoholics that I've ever met, what's this deal cost? Man, if you ain't paid that price, you're in a lot of trouble. If you ain't paid the price to come to Alcoholics Anonymous yet, I pray God you don't have to. What you have to do before you can come in and sit still in these meetings and do these things is you have to sell your soul. You have to sell every living thing you've got. You have to compromise every principle, justify every decision you've ever made in your life before you can sit down in this program and do these things it says to do. Because that's what you're going to have to do. You have to come to that state of mind if you're an alcoholic, if you want to live sober for the rest of your life. I have a guy sitting here in this front row that I love, who's guy that I sponsor, going to talk to you tonight. It took him a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to come to that decision. But thank God he made it. But he's one of the finest members of Alcoholics Anonymous I know of. And I'd say that to him even if he wasn't sitting here. Remember that. It was given to you, give it away. You can't keep it if you don't give it away. It doesn't say in that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, you can't keep it if you don't sell it. My sponsor, Norm Alpe, taught me a great deal. I don't care how you make your money. But if you make your money sober enough, drunks or working with drunks, somehow there's something different between me and you. I walk with a much more air of freedom than you do inside of me. Because I do it for free and for fun. Say, I'll never be organized. This convention don't have to worry about that. We haven't violated the ninth tradition yet, I'll tell you that. Hell, I've been here since Thursday, and I just ran into one of the committee members by accident on the street. Oh, hi, John. I'm only kidding. Really, Alex. What that means is, I always thought of organization as corporate structure. You know what the top of the list is in our corporate structure? You. Sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what the most powerful, powerful cementing block of our fellowship is? It's our home groups. You know who the most important person in that group is? The coffee maker. That kind of puts those big shot speakers somewhere back there somewhere, don't it? I'll tell you that. You don't believe that? You go to a meeting sometime when there ain't no coffee. I'm going to tell you, the secretary's in deep pucky. I've been to meetings where the coffee maker got drunk. Or the secretary got drunk and the coffee maker didn't have keys, one or the other. I got to be a coffee maker at my home group. Matter of fact, when I started a group, I was a secretary. I was a chair setup man. I was a coffee maker. Tore down the chairs. Got the speakers. Did everything. Man, I was it. And somebody said, don't you think somebody else ought to do something? I said, wait a minute. I'm staying sober. This is my job. Now it takes almost 100 people every Monday night to put that meeting on. They just shove me down as the assistant chairman over there in the corner. They don't really care. And after all I've done for them. You know who the bottom rung of the ladder is in our corporate structure? The General Service Office, New York. I know that's kind of heresy to say that in a GSR meeting, but that's true. That's true. They're supposed to be the custodians of our traditions. Supposed to be. They're supposed to be a letter opening outfit. They're supposed to be. If you ever write them, they'll tell you this, send this little letter back to you. We have no opinion. That's all they know. They have no opinion. Now, I'm not taking a shot at general service. What I'm trying to tell you of it is that you better make damn sure your home group is solid. Because if that group fails, Alcoholics Anonymous fails. General service and the general service office can fall apart tomorrow, but Alcoholics Anonymous will be alive and well in Bellflower. Because on Monday night, when I'm sitting in that group, they won't care where I've been this weekend. All they'll do is hand me that damn chair and say, put it in the closet. And then go kick your coffee cup over somewhere. Remember that. That's why it's not organized. It's not organized in a sense that it's organized. You know, but it takes some organization. I took a shot at the convention committee. We should take a lot of shots at the convention committee, but we don't. I'm trying to be kind today. They really have done a tremendous job. Really, I think you ought to give them a big clap. And you know, the 10th tradition to me is says a whole bunch of stuff. It says that I have no opinion on outside issues. I don't know what I've been expressing, but I have no opinion on them. But it really says that the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. What do you mean? See, we're not in competition with anybody. This is Alcoholics not. This is the granddaddy. This is not just another 12-step program. This is the 12-step program. A lot of people use our program. Great. Member of Alcoholics Anonymous started Gamblers Anonymous because he wanted to carry the message to the gamblers. They couldn't get the message in Alcoholics Anonymous because they didn't identify. He became a saint, that man who started Gamblers Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous, although he died drunk. Because he forgot what his primary purpose was. And so it is with most of them. If you're alcoholic like I'm alcoholic, your primary purpose has to be to stay sober. And I can't get drawn into public controversy. I have really no opinion on what goes on out there in the world. I'm only interested in what goes on in AA meetings. I'm only interested in going on what goes on in the meetings that I attend. I want to make sure the meetings I attend are AA meetings. I want to make sure that alcoholics hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not really interested in who's running for governor or who the president is or how much cars cost. Geez, I went to a meeting one night. Every 2 years, I break down and go to a participation meeting. This Friday night participation meeting was almost like a gong show. Well, you know, I never have heard anything in a participation meeting. I've never learned anything in a participation meeting. You know why? I'm sitting in participation meetings wondering what I'm going to say when they call on me. And then after I sit down, after they've called on me, I'm worried about what I didn't say when I was up there. Then if I'm sitting there, they don't call on me, I'm mad all night anyhow, for Christ's sake. And I go home hostile because I haven't heard anything. But I was sitting in this meeting one night, and this woman got up, and she said, "Oh, I really had a bad day. I had to pump gas into my own car." I said, "Lady, you ought to be damn glad you got a car. That ain't got no place in an AA meeting. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We're not a group counseling session or a dump ground. People think some meetings are garbage piles, I guess. I'm going to go over there and dump." Dump? You're supposed to share your experience, strength, and hope. You're supposed to take, because this may not apply to most people, you're supposed to take your problems to your sponsors and bring your solutions to Alcoholics Anonymous. I love 11. My public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. I need to always maintain my personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. TV. I would never allow anybody to videotape me at all. It's a violation of our tradition. I think it's a violation of our tradition to do that because you don't know where the videotape's going to go. How would you know? I sometimes wonder about these taping deals that goes on here. I get a little upset because nobody ever asked me if they can tape me. Not that I have any fantastic thing to say. I think that's just a matter of common courtesy. They don't have a right to tape me at this conference just because I'm at this conference. What gives them the right to do that? It's my story. I never say no to them. But don't you think it would be a nice common courtesy if you sit in your group and you were taping the speaker, if you said, would you mind if I tape you? I mean, does that take a lot of nonsense? Does that take a lot of effort to be courteous, to be considerate? I guess it might, for some alcoholics, to get out of themselves for 3 or 4 seconds to ask a courteous question, or even be concerned about anybody else. I'm not anonymous. My name's Johnny Harris. You want to get a hold of me? Call the central offices in Los Angeles and Long Beach. They'll bring you right through to me. My phone's listed in Long Beach. If you want to find me, that's how anonymous I am. But I'm going to tell you something. You're not going to video me. You're not going to put my name at the level of public levels or any of those kind of things. That's a violation of tradition. And this thing, this tradition, is written, but there's a spirit behind them. There's a spirit behind every one of these traditions that says very simply, I can't do these things because my life is based on it. I can't get to thinking that I'm some type of a hotshot, sit around and watch my video. I mean, I would. I try real hard not to listen to my own talks. But sometimes I just can't resist it. Hear something good. That's what kind of an egotist I am. It takes an egotist to get up on one of these podiums. You got to have an ego to get up here. You got to. We were talking about that, right, Neil? It makes you butterfly because you don't want to offend anybody, and yet I offend everybody. You can't talk about these traditions without offending people. 90% of the people don't know a damn thing about them, and the other 10% are violating them. But they're doing it because they want to help folks. Let them help themselves. Let's keep Alcoholics Anonymous whole so it'll be here for the generation of people who come. Keep it what it is, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not opposed. God knows, I probably use more drugs than practically anybody in this room. But I'm an alcoholic. I'm not going to sit here and tell you about the crack adventures and drug adventures and all them all along, let you know that I'm there. I'm an alcoholic. I use those other things, that's true. But this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I tried to add anything else on there, I'd separate me from you, wouldn't have to do these things. And I guess one of the most misunderstood traditions that we have is this 12th tradition. My anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all my traditions. Ever reminded me to place principles before personalities. Now, principles before personalities is a lot, practically all that some of these people ever learn here. The first place is you got to have some principles before you can place them before a personality. I mean, that's a little deep, I know, but it didn't cost you $30,000 either. You got to have them. That's what this is all about. Isn't it amazing how they always put things down at the tail end of our steps, like steps of spiritual awakening, something's happened to us as a result of? And down at the 12th edition, it says principles. It's accumulating or assuming, I suppose, that with some type of a principle that's come into work in our lives, and we can separate this principle which will keep us whole from who we like and who we don't like. I don't know how you are, but from time to time, my sponsor, Norm Alpe, never did this. And I know, I was with him for 22 years. He had the tremendous ability to separate these principles from this personality. Tremendous. I never seen it before, but I got a lot of it in me, I'll tell you that. It beat into my head for 22 years, these principles before these personalities. That means I don't care who you are, how much I like you, friend of mine, whatever you are. If you're violating these principles, there's something different between you and me. There's a little thing that comes in there. If you ask me about it, I'm going to tell you. Norm taught me that. And anonymity. And people talk about anonymity. Imagine about time we came out of the closet and been proud that we're alcoholics. Let everybody know. I'm not hurt. And he would have said it all. It says, I don't get any personal credit for what's happened to me. None whatsoever. I didn't do a damn thing. I showed up. And they told me what to do, and I did it. I didn't say to them, why? I've got a better idea. And my sponsor would say, yeah, you had a better idea. That's why you came to Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place. If your ideas were so damn valid, what are you doing here? If you know what's going on, what are you doing here? I don't have a better idea. I have never had a better idea. I have always known from the moment of commitment to this moment here that I don't know. I don't know. I still. That's why after 32 years, I wouldn't even think of being without a sponsor. I wouldn't dream of it. One of the toughest times of my life was a year and a half after Norm died and Papa was sick before I got Clancy for sponsor. Because I started making decisions based on my own emotions. That damn near destroyed me. Damn near. I don't know what's good for me. If I knew what was good for me, why would I ever come to a meeting, for Christ's sake? Oh, I have ideas. I think that would do well. That's what I need, yes. Oh, maybe that's better. More of that. What is? Oh, more of that, too. I don't even put bumper stickers on my car. And a bumper sticker says, easy does it. I'm a friend of Bill W.'s. Live and let live. Release. Some of these cars you go behind, you can't see out the back window. They got their bumper stickers all over. You know why I don't do that? I drive on the freeway. And there's a lot of times I don't want anybody to know I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you that. I don't want them to think that members of Alcoholics Anonymous act like that. Don't want them to think that. So what you are speaks a lot. I can't hear a word you say. Imagine what it's like. You know, you're driving down the street. You're in one of your spiritual magnificent days at that particular time. Your back windows are patched up with butterflies and all other kind of paraphernalia. And everybody says, there's a member of A. Honk, and you go, bleh. Really? If the guy ain't been to A, he's coming, I'll tell you that. He wants to go over there, I can get that for nothing. A lot of things I don't do. I was taught not to do them. And I was taught the reason to do them because I was taught about the 12 steps and the 12 tradition. I taught about the 12 concepts of service. I was taught Alcoholics Anonymous. Like a little child was taught. I was taken through all these things because I found out that the circle that encompasses the triangle is all-encompassing. One is no good without the other. That's like trying to run a race with one leg if you're just not drinking today. It's like trying to get to the finish line at a 200-mile race when you only got one wheel on your car. It's the whole thing. It's the whole package. Norm used to have a tremendous saying. He used to say, come in here, buy the whole package, and go out there and spend a day just being yourself. How many of you ever done that before you got here? I didn't. And I never knew what self was. I never knew who I was. I never had the slightest idea, and there's times today I don't know. But one thing I've always known. I've always known that I love you. I love you enough to try to be the best member of Alcoholics Anonymous I could possibly ever be. I love you enough to do whatever it is you ask me to do, no matter how long I've been sober, how magnificent I think I am at that moment. I'll do whatever you ask me to do. You've never asked me to do anything you don't want to do. My sponsor, Norm, used to tell him, I said, Norm, say what? And I said, I'm a miracle! He said, you're the most egotistical idiot I've ever known, jackass, he'd say to me. I said, what are you talking about? He said, what makes you think you're a miracle? I said, well, that's what I heard. Sounds good at the time. He said, no, Johnny. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. And you're just a small part of it. I don't know what that does for a single solitary soul in this room, but to realize that I'm not the miracle, that you're the miracle. The encompassing miracle of it is this thing is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just get to be a small, small part of it. Not the part, not the whole. Just a small part of it. I guess I could stand here today and thank you for every living thing that I have in my life. Everything I'm ever going to have in my life, I could probably think that. I can thank you for my children and for my grandchildren, for the people who are in my life and the people who aren't in my life, the people who've been here and the people who are gone, because they all made a mark on me. They all loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I surround myself with people who love this program. Surrounded. That's where I don't want to go somewhere. I learned to love you a long, long time before I ever cared anything at all about me. I practiced that principle that Bill wrote about in St. Francis of Assisi. Didn't know what was happening when it happened, but I loved you before I could ever learn to love me. I comfort you before I need comfort. I just love you a great deal. I'd like to thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous today. But I think more important than anything that I know of, I'd like to thank you and Alcoholics Anonymous for my God. God bless you.